Mr. Norris, my name's Barbara Lacey, and it's really nice to see you here. It's encouraging to me to hear somebody, a politician, talk about quality of life issues, because I think nowadays that is becoming more and more important, more people are taking notice. And I was really pleased to hear you talk about museum funding, particularly in light of the cuts recently from the federal government. What I didn't hear you talk about was arts and culture. And one of the problems is that the grants to arts and culture haven't been increased since about the early 90s. And I wonder if you feel that's a quality of life issue. Would that be something you would be addressing?
Yes, it would. And I also want to say thank you for meeting with me when you were an alderman, when we came down to visit. I appreciated that.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. The whole purpose of having a new tourism, parks, and culture ministry will be identify those opportunities. Things like the Wild Rose Foundation that do such great work around the province. I don't look at those things as spending money, but rather investments in our quality of life. They have a huge trickle-down effect on the economy. Mm-hmm. And for far too long, our government has been all about paying down the debt and not about the quality of life. And yes, absolutely, having been in a musical myself as Bud the Singing Cowboy, I know what it does for your own personal self-worth, but it's just the way to celebrate life at the end of the day. It's the way that we should feel good about being Albertans. And historically, it's always had help from governments. We've had we had the heyday under Mary LeMessurier, who I'm sure many folks remember, including John. Mm-hmm. And her task was to go make Alberta the cultural hub of Canada, and we succeeded. And then we've successively let it slide down, and I don't want to be part of that. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Norris, thank you very much for being here. My name is Terry Shellington. I'd like to ask about a subject you didn't address, namely health care. And I know the debate around the third way is going on inside the leadership race, and I've heard a candidate say recently that people ought to have the freedom to pay for their own surgery. And where do you stand on that and the issue of doctors working inside and outside the public system and some of those issues around private medicine?
Right. Well, thank you very much for the question. And I'm going to take a bit of a different tact on this because healthcare, if we wanted to talk about it, we could go on for literally hours. But I'll tell you what, if I'm elected, we'll do. The very first thing we're going to do is a top-down review of how the money is being spent. I have watched successively as... I have watched successively as money has been poured into that system from about $4.5 billion when I was there to now $10 billion. I see more and more administration. I don't see any more doctors or nurses, and that scares the heck out of me. And I have two young kids and aging parents, so I am using both ends of the system. So I want to go and say to the regional health authorities, I'm sure you're doing good work, but are you hiring administrators or are you hiring doctors and nurses? And that's the first thing we'll do. The second thing is I'm not in favor of private delivery. I'm not in favor of doctors splitting their time. I've studied every model from Norway to Britain to France to try and understand how that works. It doesn't. What I am in favor of saying is we have a great system. We have to make sure that the money is being spent wisely, because I don't believe it is. And after that fact, if doctors want to opt out of the system entirely and set up their own stuff and people want to use it, I don't have a problem with it. And the term is publicly funded, privately delivered. We have a model in Edmonton called MedCenters, where a group of doctors have put together primary health care facilities. They're nothing more than in a shopping mall, and you can go in with minor cuts and scrapes. The government of Alberta pays the rate. It's $17 a visit, or whatever the numbers are. But what it does is take those people away from the major hospitals, which might be $1,000 an hour, and clogged with people who need real acute care. And I think more models like that have to be studied. But I don't know how you can expect a doctor to split his time and not go into the private sector 100%. That makes no sense to me. And so I believe in our public education system and our public health care system. We'll fight for them, but can tell you right now, I think we're wasting billions of dollars in both of them. And that's where we want to start. Thanks.
My name is Bob Tarlick, and you identified three major pillars for economic development. There are two additional pillars that are important in this community. One is post-secondary education and research, and the other is sustainable energy. And in terms of sustainable energy, 38 communities in southwestern Alberta have come together with a mission of making this part of province a world leader in sustainable energy, dealing with wind, biomass, including crops, and solar. And I wonder what future you see for the province encouraging these two vital sectors of our economy.
Well, thank you very much for the question, Mr. Mayor. When I talk about the emerging industries, the list in my mind is up around 15, and clearly post-secondary is one of them. When I went to university in Nova Scotia, an amazing thing happened, aside from the fact that I graduated, which was really amazing. But the province of Nova Scotia, one of their major industries is post-secondary education. I'm not sure if people were aware of that, but it is. Next to tourism and fisheries, that's one of their big three. And it dawned on me that that's a whole industry to itself. We have great facilities in the U of L, the college, University of Alberta, NAIT, SAIT, and they're producing great things in the ways of technology, but they don't get as much support as they might. That's why I want some of that money, Bob, to go into our endowments for science research and things of that nature. What we did originally was set up a $500 million in the science endowment fund, and of course, like any endowment fund, they were supposed to use the interest. Well, when we set it up, the markets tanked for 2 years, so not only did they not get interest, the fund dropped in its value. But I do think there's a lot of merit in that. Regards sustainable power, I'm almost there as a believer. And I know I spent a lot of time down here with Dave Coutts and Barry McFarland and others touring wind farms and things of that nature. But to me, we still have a real opportunity in coal. And maybe one of the things we do is use those research facilities to say, let's get to clean coal, let's get to zero emissions. Because wind power at the stage it's at right now will, I don't think in my lifetime, will be able to provide the power we need, but it's getting there. And I don't have a quick answer for the environmentally friendly side of it, but I do know that the Alberta government, when John was there and others, put a lot of money into AOSTRA, which was the oil sands, and made that a reality. So I would look to do something similar to that. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Hunter Hagee. Mark, it's always good to see you back in Lethbridge again, and every time you're here, I'm reminded of the hard work you did with Integra Air and working with our local airlines to defend them in Edmonton. But my question today is on employment and the lack of employees that many businesses, including myself, are feeling right now. There's a very big pinch there, and what the government of Alberta, your government, would do about that.
Right.
Thanks.
Well, before I talk about labor, I do want to thank you for the stand on the airport, because I know that Mayor Bob and a whole bunch of others were very supportive, and a lot of people in Edmonton think it's why I lost my seat. Just for those who weren't fully aware of the issue, there we have a little airport downtown that smaller centers were allowed to fly into, Grand Prairie, Fort McMurray, Medicine Hat, Lethbridge. And the common wisdom was to shut it down completely and make people route through the big airports. And for Lethbridgeans or Lethbridgeites, that would have been about a 6 or 7 hour journey. And so I fought that. And we were successful on parts of it, not so successful on others. But I can tell you, when I did it because I was a minister for all of Alberta. I wasn't a minister for Edmonton. And the voices of Lethbridge and Fort McMurray and Peace River, I heard loud and clear. And I think it's important moving forward that anybody who wants to run this province think more than just their own little region. Can't have it that way. With regards to labor, we have a four-point strategy, Hunter, and it's not going to solve the problem overnight. And if anybody promises that, they're not telling you the truth. But it is, in my estimation, the biggest issue that this campaign is going to be fought on, because I've now seen the lack of labor start to impede economic development and growth. Businesses shutting down or not starting. And when you're talking about what's fueling a lot of the economy, it's these major mega projects, and if they don't go ahead, another bit of a problem. I would look at this in 4 points. Education, the post-secondaries that Mayor Bob referred to, we're not funding them adequately. We're turning away students by the thousands from universities and technical colleges. We know that. We have to find enough spaces and get creative with long-distance learning so that Alberta kids don't have to have 97% to get into med school and leave with $50,000 worth of debt. When I graduated from high school, to get into arts, it was about 68%, which was very lucky because that's pretty much where I was at. So I don't think I turned out bad, and I'm grateful that I got the chance. Now kids don't even get the chance. That's not the Alberta I want to grow up in. It's not fair. So the first is education. The second is net migration. We have to start thinking of these projects in northern Alberta as the next national dream. These are so big, they're beyond comprehension. And if you're sitting unemployed in Nova Scotia or Newfoundland or somewhere else, and you want full-time opportunities, come on out. But I think the Alberta government has to make a pitch to say the jobs are here tomorrow. The third is the Aboriginal population. In our general population, unemployment is 4.5%, which is basically none. The Aboriginal population, it's about 60%. And something's gone seriously wrong there. And there's a great labor pool that can be tapped immediately. And then the fourth, of course, is immigration. And I would like to take a page out of Quebec's book and have our own immigration department that lets the federal government do the health and security check, and then we do the rest. Because quite frankly, we have offices around the world that we can go to people and say, Mexico, India, China, we're open. And like we did 50 years ago when we went to Poland and Czechoslovakia and Germany, the markets have shifted, but the demand hasn't. And so those four things is what we would implement in a very short order, Hunter. Thank you.
Mark, my name is John Baldwin. I try to formulate what my question is, but in the run-up to the deregulation that we went through over the last couple of years, we have had a couple of suppliers which were trying to sign us up for 5-year contracts, and I hear sometimes 10-year contract, trying to scare the people in that the prices are going up and going up. Last year's prices of natural gas is almost 3 times what it is going to be this fall, but it was the Alberta advantage to have a free market in this. In the meantime, I live amongst a lot of seniors what do not necessarily understand, and then they got scared stiff and they signed up for 5 years at prices which are sky high. Are we taking the Alberta advantage that way that the common Joe cannot afford to live here anymore?
Right.
What are you going to do about that?
Well, John, I not only do I appreciate your question, it's been echoed in every corner of the province, and I think the deregulation for some things worked very well, liquor stores and registries. I think for electricity it hasn't worked remotely. And what we were trying to do as a government, based partly on ideology and partly on demand, was say we need more generation. We're running short. Nobody would build new plants, or so the story went, until we freed up that. So we got more plants built. On the commercial side, where the consumer, the little guy, is, there's no competition. So why would there be any price challenging? There's nothing. And I get very worried, especially when I see people like my parents living on a fixed income and their prices going up for the utilities and their income not going up, and that gap gets bigger and bigger. What we have called for publicly is an immediate review of the deregulation of the consumer side of the electricity. And to look at it and say, listen, one of the hallmarks of this government under Lougheed, Getty, and Klein has always been, if we made a mistake, back up, admit it, and fix it. I think we're not willing to say we made a mistake. So let's back up and fix it. And if it means having a regulated rate option that everybody in the province has to fall under, so be it. The only guys that have benefited under this is big business and anybody who's an association, motels, hotels, etc. They go and buy block power at 3 cents a kilowatt hour, and it's great. Me, I have a house. You know, I think people think you're in politics and you don't see this. I have a house. I've seen what's happened. I get my bill with a line charge and an assist to the line charge, fixing the assist to the line charge. You know, and I say, just give me the bill and give it to me straight up. And so that's the end result is what we'd like to come up with, John, a bill that says you're paying 4.5 cents a kilowatt hour, the delivery is 2 cents, there's your power, and admit that we have made a mistake.
Mr. Norris, my name is Austin Fennell, and thank you for being here and speaking to us today. I have two questions. There is lots of discussion from different sources today about global warming, and the tar sands is a major producer of carbon dioxide. My question would be, what would be your position about doing something about that, about bringing some kind of control to that? Second question has, would you promote and advocate continually the use of lottery monies and the sources that they come from?
Well, thank you very much for the puffballs, Austin. with regards to the oil sands, I am on record as saying that I think that's a great economic opportunity that seems to have run wild. And it strikes me that we're in gold rush fever again, that we're going to go through Edmonton to get up to Fort McMurray and go make a ton of money. I have been so far the only candidate and the first candidate to call for an additional adjunct to the Ministry of Energy called oil sands development, because I think we have to have a whole plan around this. When we have that ministry structured, I would like to sit down with environmental groups, labor groups, the businesses that are driving it, the County of Wood Buffalo, the municipalities, and say, is this the kind of development we want that's crushing this town and this part of the region of the province, and not maybe getting the environmental stuff right? Or can we use a little measured, more measured pace? I've been fascinated by the debate in the papers. Well, you must be anti-business. My whole life is business. But I also understand when you're building a neighborhood, you have to put in the sewers and the roads, and then you let people move in. I think we went the other way around in Fort McMurray. And the environmental side is a huge, huge issue. And so I want to have that ministry start tackling that issue. The one thing that I have been fascinated by is that Alberta has been a leader in a lot of ways with clean coal technology, Climate Change Central, the Water for Life strategy that Lauren Taylor put together. These are all leading-edge things. Our recycling of tires, we're second only to Germany in that ability. Our recycling of computers, we're the first in North America. But when it gets to the big picture stuff, we seem to disconnect. And the use of fresh water in the production of that, to me, is mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling. So I don't have a quick answer for you, but I do want to set up a ministry called Energy and Oil Sands Development that will be tasked with giving a report within 6 months to a year to say, how do we get all these things right and get everybody at the table? Don't have the Department of Energy doing it on its own. With regards to the second question, I'm a Catholic, practicing, and I know that Fred Henry yesterday in Calgary said that they're going to disconnect all funding from the bingos, etc. So the question I have is, what's going to replace the revenue? If we go back to the people of Alberta and say, we can fund the school system at $2,000 a person and you will do fundraising, or we can fund it at $3,000 a person and you won't have to do fundraising, are you happy with that? And I think that's where the debate has to start. There is an awful lot of people who rely heavily on those dollars. So to say you can't do it anymore, I don't think is reasonable. But I think that we have the money internally to fund these things appropriately, so that I'm not going to be going and raising at a casino to send my kid to a hockey camp. And as a father, I don't have enough time to do it anymore. I don't. I don't recall my dad was at one fundraiser, ever. I loved him dearly. He was a great guy. Never showed up at the fundraisers because we didn't have them. Everything was provided for us. So somewhere in the middle, the pendulum is going to swing. But I would much rather be in favor of funding the system appropriately than having people rely on fundraising.
Hello. I'm not going to spend any time in talking about the whereases, because I think...
We all know who you are, John, but...
I wasn't going to introduce myself, anyway. The whereases, as which people present properly, ahead of the therefore. The question I'm asking is, what about proportional representation, and certainly fixed terms on government, on members of the legislature, is not enough. And I'm sure with you, with Bishop Henry's, we're not going to take the bank gambling money. Thank you.
Okay. Well, excuse me. I am going to unfortunately disappoint you on this one, John. I'm not a fan of proportional representation, and I'll tell you why. I haven't seen one system where I don't get to vote for my guy in proportional representation. And the closest I've seen is Norway, where they have the first 50 members are elected on the first-past-the-post system, and then the rest are all who finishes next and who's picked by the party. And I don't like that. I want to be able to go vote for the guy in my neighborhood. And at the end of the day, while this system may not be the best, it's the only one that I've seen where you can do that. And I know... lots of people want PR. I know it. I don't agree with it because I haven't seen a system that tells me how it works properly. And you can say, well, the Liberals got 30%, and the Conservatives got 40%, and the NDs got 10%, and wouldn't that be a nice mix? Okay, who are you going to pick? Where do you take them from? And I want to go to my ballot box and say, that person is my guy, and he's accountable to me. And I don't want to have a list to choose from. So I'm not throwing it out completely, but I'd have to do a lot more work on it to understand how you make that work. And therein lies my only difficulty with it.
Looking at Europe, just about all of that.
Well, and I would argue that if you look at Italy particularly, is a country that's been locked in doing nothing for the last 10 years because of the system. It's all about trying to make compromise when you get into that system. And it's not the kind of system that I want. And I know it flies in the face. I'm sorry. I'd like to agree with everything because I'm a Irish Catholic and I like to get along with people. But this one, I tend to say, no, it doesn't. I don't see it working. So, but I'll keep an open mind.
My name is Gordon Campbell. I appreciate very much your straight, clear answers to questions and to issues. However, on the question that Terry Shillington asked, it wasn't totally clear to me your position on private for-profit medicine. So I want to ask you some very particular questions upon which I'm sure I will receive very clear and specific answers.
I will do my best, yes.
Yeah. And Bill 11. Where were you on Bill 11? Bill 11 was protested vigorously by rallies, huge rallies in Calgary, huge rallies in Edmonton, medicine everywhere. And this government passed that legislation anyway,
yep.
So as to allow for private hospitals and private for-profit hospital care to undergo contrary to the Health Act. I want to know where you were and what you thought. You were a member of the government that did that. Secondly, come the third wave. Mr. Klein did everything in his power, including having an international conference with about $500,000, $750,000 spent, and bringing specialists from all over the world who concluded, contrary to his expectations, that Alberta had a very good system that needed tuning up and fixing up here and there, but it was fundamentally sound, and health care in Canada was fundamentally sound. He did everything in his power to persuade Albertans that the third way was the right way. Where were you when this government was doing these kind of things? When this government agreed to break, anybody could break the queue if they had the money.
Right.
Where were you?
Very good questions. You, fortunately, I guess for me, I was out of government both times. But I will answer your question very directly. Bill 11, I'm in favor of repealing it. I don't think that it was well thought through, and it's time to review it. That was about 1996. I was a young businessman with two young kids. A supporter of the party, didn't quite understand what they were doing, but overall I supported what was happening. Bill 11, I wasn't there. The third way, I'm very proud to say I was the first leadership candidate, and at the time the only one to stand up and say, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And as it got more popular in opinion, others started to say it. And I have on record when they all came on board. But I can tell you, I was the very first. And the reason is that health care, to me, is a birthright of Albertans that cannot be talked about in terms of dollars and cents, or this is a quick fix, or this is an easy thing to do. And what we did as a government was go out and say, the whole system is in chaos. It's in collapse. The only solution is to get this other thing going. And I thought, that's nonsense. I've used the system four or five times. My dad had bypass surgery, had two kids. I had a surgery. It was wonderful. It was a very good experience. There are certain parts of the system that need to be looked at seriously. Hip replacements, people waiting for MRIs, those types of things. But that's management issues. That's not a fundamental philosophy change. And so when we came out and said, the third way means private insurance, I said, who's going to provide the service? If you buy the private insurance, who provides the service? It's still there's only one person providing the service. So I was dead set against it. What I am in favor of is if a doctor wants to opt out completely from the system, set up some kind of clinic, and go and do his thing, the government can pay. It's happened before. The Gimbel Clinic comes to mind, where we were 2 years behind on cataract surgery. Gimbel set up his clinic. The government of Alberta paid for the fee, so there was no out-of-pocket exchange. It was the same thing. You could either go to the hospital and wait 6 months, or you could go to the Gimbel Clinic and wait 2 weeks. They cleared up that backlog in 3 months. So I know that there are models that work, and that's what I'd like to look at more of. So I hope that's clear. I'm not in favor of private for-profit medicine, but I am in favor of doctors having the ability to work better within the system.
You are in favor of single-tier medicine?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And maybe while you're coming up, I want to throw out a comment about these issues that you're bringing up, because I feel it's vitally important to look at everybody's record, and you hit the nail on the head, and I didn't dodge a bullet because I wasn't there, but you're right. when people stand in front of you now and say, this is what we'll do for roads or hospitals or schools, I'm all for value added, I'm all for this, well, where were they? Because all of my opponents, sadly, are all career politicians. They've all been there for 13, 15, 16 years. So it's very hard for me to have been part of a government that I think we got turfed out because we didn't have any ideas, quite frankly, in Edmonton, and hear everyone saying, well, here's my way to solve it. Well, they were all there. So your question is bang on. And this is the time now, we're going to make the biggest decision in the history of Alberta in the last 15 years. This is the time to say, no, I seem to recall that you were on the other side of that equation. Or what was your thought pattern then? At least ask the questions. That's all I ask. And I appreciate you giving me the chance to do that.
Hello, Mark. My name is Dennis King, and my question has to do with education and the education tax, something that the mayor and I disagree about. If we remove property tax being applied to education resources, how do we maintain the decision-making power at the local level? We heard a plan last week in this SACPAW meeting where the current property tax that's set up for education would be turned back to the municipalities. I'd like to know how you'd like to or plan to maintain the quality education you mentioned earlier without those resources being applied to education.
Well, I appreciate the question very much, and again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I was the first candidate to come out and publicly talk about this, and I do agree with ceding that municipal education portion back to the city, but there's an additional part of it. There are grants and bursaries and one-time funding that goes to cities. I would like to negotiate out of that. And then I would like to say to the people of Alberta, we believe that it costs $5,000 per child to educate. There are 600,000 kids in the system, ergo we need X millions of dollars to provide for the system and fund it properly. And my math tells me that we take in $1.4 billion on the education portion of the property tax, and we give about $800 million, roughly, in grants and bursaries and one-time funding. So if you did it as a wash, it would cost the government of Alberta $700 million when all the dust settles. And I think we can find that money. What I would commit, though, and pledge, is that we'll fund the system appropriately, the education system, and then free up that money for the municipalities. Because I've watched as Alberta says, we've shipped $12 and $13 billion a year down to Ottawa, and we don't get that in services back, and isn't that a shame? Then the province does the exact same thing to the municipalities and says, isn't that a shame? Well, I don't want to be part of a government doing that. So our theory was, and I don't know if it's the right one, but this is what we're staking our stand on. Leave those to the municipalities. Let them have the money to build the roads and the sewers they want. That the government of Alberta step up and do its job, which is fund education appropriately, set the standards, and pay the bill. And I know full well that we have the money because we've had 10 years' worth of surpluses that have amounted now to some $32 billion. So I don't believe for a second that we cannot find the money if we budget it properly. And that's the take I would take. And I would not do it over 1 year. I would do it over 5 years because I think the municipalities and the province need to balance out. But it's doable. I believe it. And then when the municipalities have that money, they can do what they need to do with it. And it's not the best fix by any stretch, but it's the one that I'm going to hang my hat on.
We have time for one or two more questions, if there's anyone who'd like to come up.
My name is James Moore. Appreciate your forthrightness, Mark. I like that you addressed a question that I had about where the money's coming from in the leadership campaign and where it's going. I didn't find your data on your website. I don't know if it is there or I didn't find it, or if you could put it there. I think it would be a really good idea and also maybe inspire the others. But I do have another question. It's disturbing to me, and I think to a lot of people, although perhaps a lot of people don't know about this, but 2 weeks ago in Banff, there was a meeting of the, I think they call themselves the Security and Prosperity Council, or something like that, and in attendance were apparently Donald Rumsfeld, Suncor CEO, I think Greg Malkin from the Ministry of Energy were there. And I guess what really concerns me is, if there's these kind of secret meetings going on, and if you want to be accountable to people of Alberta, and if you're sincere about that, then, like, it bothers me that, like, what kind of accountability and what kind of decisions are being made behind that door? And we all have to understand that the oil sands was in play at that meeting, one way or another. So I guess directly it concerns me to wonder whether the government of Alberta sees itself as accountable to these corporations and these other secret entities, or to the people of Alberta, especially in terms of the resources and these kind of meetings that went on 2 weeks ago.
Right, right. Well, it's a great question. I don't know what the meeting was, and I can tell you when I was minister, I never attended meetings of that nature. There is a global business forum that's put on by the Department of Economic Development in Banff every fall, but it's very open, and it's not, they're plenary sessions and discussing the future of economics in Alberta. I'm not sure what this one is, but I think that's really one of the things that's motivating me most to run. My dad was an alderman in the city of Edmonton for 15 years, very respected, and ended up getting out of it because towards the end it was very much people taking shots and doing all those kind of things. And the reason they did, I think, was because of all those behind-door decisions in camera, right? And so I don't have a quick answer for you, but I know that we want to be the campaign that connects with the average Albertan. I'm not big oil. I'm not anything other than what you see before you, a small business guy. And I know that in my own companies, in order for everybody to pull in the same way, we all were involved in the decision-making process. And that's something that's been missing in Alberta for a while now. So I can't make you any promises other than my background tells me that those kind of meetings aren't appropriate. The resources belong to everybody in this room and all the people of Alberta. And we have to be very transparent in the decisions that we make. Very transparent. I hope that helps.
Well, thank you very much for responding to all of our questions and for coming down to Lethbridge today to be at Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. Let's give him a warm... Oh, he wants to make one final statement here.
Yeah. I just want to remind everybody the process that we're under right now is a $5 membership, and I'm not here to sell you them, but I really do think if you want to have involvement in the process now, you won't get a better chance. It's the only province in Canada you can actually vote for the Premier, and I think that's a pretty exciting opportunity. So thank you very much for giving me some time. So.
It is over. You can ask afterwards.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, as we started this evening,
well, come over to the mic then. Bob still got the camera on. The fun stuff always happens after the camera's turned off.
Well, the first thing I said at our table today, I'm Susan Giffen, by the way, was that the problem I have with what's going on right now with the leadership of the Progressive Conservative Party of Alberta is that somehow this is turning into a vote for the Premier. Well, I know that de facto whoever becomes the leader of the party will become the Premier, but this is not the election.
No,
the election comes when you, the Conservatives and the Liberals and the NDP and the... Who are you? The Alliance and the Greens and everybody vote. But in Alberta, we don't understand that.
Yeah.
We don't understand that. This is not the election. You're choosing a leader of your party. And I will not be buying a $5 membership to vote in it. I'm not a Conservative.
Well, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. That's not what
wrong.
I said. I didn't indicate that, and I hope I didn't.
I hope not.
If you're interested in the process, buy a membership, but it is party politics. You're absolutely correct. There are two elections coming. This is the first one, and for at least 6 months to a year, whoever the person is will be the Premier, and then there will be another general election, and you're absolutely correct. My only purpose in saying it is that if you want to get involved, that's how you do it. So you don't have to. Bridget, leave your campaign manager at home next time, eh?
Okay.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Once again, thank you.
Thanks.